Hello and welcome to another USA Hockey Magazine podcast. I'm Harry Thompson, the editor of USA Hockey Magazine. And today we're joined by Guy Goslin, who is an ADM regional manager up in the great state of Wisconsin. Guy, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Harry.
You know, Guy, I know that you have quite a hockey career and hockey resume that you've built up over your lifetime. I wanted to just start off for those few people out there who may not know. Just you come from Rochester, Minnesota, and just wanted to get a little bit of your hockey background and when you got started and how, you know, and kind of the path you took to get to the U.S. Olympic team.
Okay. Well, I grew up playing youth hockey in Rochester, Minnesota, essentially at the local rinks. You know, I started out playing at 4 years old and really enjoying the game. We usually practiced outside and just really had a great time playing ice hockey at that point, and played a lot of other sports along the way. It was hockey, football, baseball, and when we weren't doing that, we were doing a lot of other things. But played my youth hockey then and then went on to play high school hockey in Rochester, John Marshall. I want to add that I was an A, B, C player throughout the years of the youth hockey experience. So my parents wouldn't let me play travel hockey until I was 12. And then again, it was A, B, C, you know, and things kind of progressed from the youth ranks. Did pretty well in high school and accepted a scholarship at Minnesota Duluth. During that time, I was a baseball player and a hockey player. Went to Duluth and had a pretty decent career up there. Had a lot of fun, got an education, and was fortunate enough to make the 88 Olympic team. From there, I signed a contract with Winnipeg, played up and down, decided to play on the 92 team, or was fortunate enough to be asked to play on the 92 team. And during those years, I was playing in the world tournaments as well. Had a couple years in the American League, and went on to play some hockey over in Sweden, and just really was anything after high school was a bonus for me.
So obviously you've been the beneficiary of some great coaching over the years. Who are some of the coaches that really stand out and really influence you, and especially in your role today as an ADM regional manager?
Well, obviously my youth hockey coaches, you know, and I could go through all of them. They were great guys. They had a lot of passion for the game and compassion for kids. My high school hockey coach, Gene Sack, was unbelievable. He absolutely got it and knew what it's all about, and in that you're developing an individual, not necessarily a player. You know, moving forward onto that, onto college, Mike Sertich was the same way. They both understood that the value was in the experience that you were having at the time, not where you're going to end up at the end of the hunt. And there weren't any preconceived notions back then. We just played hockey because we loved the game, and things fell into place for us.
And, you know, that brings up one of the topics we wanted to talk about today, and that is talking about the long-term patience that you need to have when it comes to player development. As we know and we touch upon in these ADM podcasts, is the ADM is a top-to-bottom approach. It's not just Mike Cross Ice Hockey. It's all the way up. What do you see in your travels today? How is the culture of the game different in terms of, you know, what you touched upon, what their expectations? How have expectations, do you think, changed over the years?
Well, again, we played because we absolutely loved playing the game. It was a passion, and you need to keep that passion. Nothing was pre-planned. We all went to the rink and had a good time, and there weren't any manufactured, for lack of a better word here, manufactured hockey players. We played for the love of the game, and there was no such thing as speed farming. You know, people let things just fall into place. And that's what you need to do. If you put a kid into a situation where you're going too fast, he's going to push back. Also, you know, as a young player, if anybody had profiled me at 10, 12, 14 years old, I can promise you I would have never had a chance to play on the Olympic team or even play college hockey for that matter.
I got three questions for you, three topics or three phrases that you used there. One was, you said, keep the passion. And when you're talking about keeping the passion, I mean, you know, there'll be people out today who will say, well, you know, my kid loves to play hockey. I mean, what do you think the difference is in the passion back, you know, playing on those outdoor municipal rinks in Rochester and what kids are doing today?
Well, the early specialization thing is really hurting us. Picking one sport early is not helping the kids, you know. Early specialization is good for burnout, peaking at 16, and overuse injuries. You know, when the hockey season was over, we'd normally take our skates off and get a baseball bat out or, you know, just hang out with our buddies. But we may play street hockey because everybody in the neighborhood had a net. But, you know, it wasn't forced upon us. I think that the players today are hockeyed out. Even our elite players are lacking passion. And the guys that seem to make it through to the big time, to the NHL, to professional hockey, are the ones that continue having that passion. So I really feel you're pushing them too hard at a young age. The kids, you know, there's a good chance the kids aren't going to reach their full potential.
The second phrase that you used, which I thought was really interesting, was manufactured hockey player. What exactly does that mean?
Well, it's going out and going through the motions, essentially, and a lot of the kids are overcoached, overparented. There's not a lot of feel. They may be good mechanically, X's and O's, but not real creative with the game, and we're lacking that in our game today as far as creativity.
I once heard Doug Palazzari refer to those kind of players as hockey school players.
Yeah. they know a lot, you know. I mean, they've been coached with X's and O's, but we're lacking that in the game today, and, you know, that develops mediocre hockey players.
This is probably a whole nother podcast subject for another time, but, I mean, how do you instill that creativity into players? Because what somebody would say is, hey, you know, hey, that's great. You grew up in Rochester, Minnesota. You have unlimited outdoor ice. You know, I live in, you know, a place where ice is $400 an hour. We don't have the luxury of taking that time. How do you try to capture that pond hockey feel inside in a rink?
Well, again, it's recreating the playground. You need to let the kids go out and just do what kids do. You know, let them move around on the ice and in an unstructured environment. I think that's very important, especially for the young guys, to make sure that they're having fun out there. And activity-based practices are key. But let them go out and do what they want to do and keep a positive learning environment. You know, the coaching in the car or the condescending things that are going on in the hallways and the locker rooms, we can do without that stuff. We have to remember that these are little kids. They're not mini NHLers. And they're doing this for fun. And we need to develop that passion for the game.
And then, Guy, you also used the phrase speed farming. I was wondering if you can kind of explain what you meant by that.
Well, that's Mike Boyle's term. I stole it from him. He's a strength and conditioning guy out east. Very popular guy. Very smart guy. Speed farming is trying to push the crops and come up with an end product before you're there, meaning it takes time to cultivate the crops. Okay, just like players, just like schoolwork, you don't teach a kindergartner 10th grade math. It takes time. And hockey's a progression of skills, and we need to teach age-appropriate training out there and not put the cart before the horse.
What are the, I mean, you see a lot of parents will say, you know, my kid's one of the best 8-year-olds, he should be playing up in squirt level. How does that really hinder that young player's development?
Well, you know, they may be physically able to do that out on the ice, but cognitively, things are work a little bit differently upstairs for a little guy than maybe a kid 2 years older than him. Most kids want to play the game because they want to be with their buddies and have fun, and that's the final answer. And we have a saying, do you want to have a good mate or a good midget? So we firmly believe that a kid should be playing at the level with his friends at the same age.
And the final word is, I want your thoughts on the top-to-bottom progression that the ADM has created and how that's going to help develop the next generation of hockey player.
Well, if you take a look at the registered numbers, you know, with the International Ice Hockey Federation and their numbers at U18, we have seen the track record of some of these smaller countries – You know, we're second with 305, approximately 305,000 registered U18 players. And when you get teams that are countries that have implemented long-term athlete development models that are very successful on the world stage, that have, you know, anywhere from 7,000 to 12,000 registered U18 players, we have not done a very good job with our player development.
Well, you know what, Guy, this has been awesome. I mean, there's a lot of things we could talk about here, and we will down the road, but I want to thank you for taking the time today and being with us on the air and joining us for this USA Hockey Magazine podcast.
Thanks, Harry. I appreciate it.
And thanks, everybody, for listening out there, and tune in again when we will look at other facets of the American development model and how it's helping our next generation of youth hockey players.